Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to take a look at the archetypal significations of Jupiter and Uranus when they combine. We're going to focus on what they look like when they have expressed themselves historically and collectively. I'm going to be calling on a few different texts, and hopefully some of these will become your new best friends because these are a few of my favorite books on archetypal astrology. And I'm going to read a few passages and I'm going to also comment and offer some reflections on how these historical and collective themes with Jupiter and Uranus cycles also correlate to our personal lives in some really interesting ways. So I hope you will enjoy this. I think it's going to be the first of a few parts that I do as we come closer to the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, because there are enough really valuable passages that I'd like to take a look at. But I think spreading them out will make more sense. So this will probably be the first of a few in a series that will help us really move deeply into the Jupiter-Uranus signature that's coming up. Anyway, that's our goal for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and reflections. If you have them, we'd love to hear from you. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. Got a couple of things we're promoting at the beginning of today's talk, and you can find those over on the website, nightlightastrology.com as well. Go to the events page, click on live talks. You're going to see that on April 18th, just a few days before Jupiter and Uranus combine, or conjoin, I should say, in Taurus, I am giving a talk on Uranus in love and relationships. Feels appropriate for Jupiter and Uranus meeting in the sign of Venus, but we're going to be looking at Uranus in the birth chart and by transit when it is involved in the topic of love, sex, and relationships. We've already done Neptune and Pluto in love. You could pick up the recordings of those talks in the live talks page or the shop page if you wanted to. When you register, it is from 7 to 9 p.m. on April 18th via live webinar. But if you can't make it live, once you register, we also send you the recording link so you could listen to it on your own time later. So check that out. I hope to see some of you there. The other thing that I'm promoting right now is our new enrollment season. In June, we begin a new year one course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. About a 1 year immersion into Hellenistic astrology begins on June 16th. You can learn more about that on the first year course page. If you stick around after the end of today's video, there's also an additional informational video that I have tagged onto the end of today's content so you could listen and learn more about the program and what it entails. Main thing you need to know, 30 classes on the year. We have 12 guest teachers that come in outside of those 30 classes. Those 30 classes constitute the main curriculum. Between major units of study in the curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our staff, so you can have a little extra support if you need it with tutoring and reviewing. We also have an interactive group forum discussion staffed with tutors so that you can always ask questions and get them answered within 24 hours as you're studying the material. The material is all recorded and also live. So you can attend the live webinars in live classroom, ask questions, interact live. And also, if you can't attend live because of a time zone or conflict with work or your family or whatever, you can access the recordings whenever you want, and you get to keep them for there's lifetime access to the course material. There's a ton of supplemental material, so it is designed for people who want to go professional or people who are just practicing and developing it as a hobby or your own spiritual growth and development. At the bottom, you'll find the payment options. Early Bird saves you $500 off. There's a payment plan. You can spread it out over a year. And there's also need-based tuition assistance. So if you're someone who'd like to take the course, but you need a little help to make it happen, sign up for the need-based tuition assistance. We are glad to help people who maybe have a little, maybe some difficulties financially, or you're on a very tight budget. We get it. Not everyone is in the same place. We want to make sure that the content and class is accessible to people of different socioeconomic backgrounds. So please take advantage of that if it will help you. All right, on that note, and again, you can stick around at the end today to learn more about the program. I hope to see you guys in class soon. Let us take a look at this upcoming Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, which we are going to be visiting in a few episodes. We've said a lot about Jupiter and Uranus, but we're going to really kind of focus in on this archetypal combination today, and I think in another episode or two prior to the conjunction. So here we can see the two planets are coming together in the sign of Taurus, and they get together right about April. You can see April 20th to the 21st. That's when they cross over the exact conjunction down to the minute. But Jupiter enters that 21st degree as early as April 17th and doesn't leave all the way until about April 22nd. So, and regardless, you have the two of them co-present in the same sign. So we've been working with this energy for a while. And when the transit perfects by the degree, you typically look at about a 3-degree range applying and separating. And so if you stretch that out a bit, you know, we've got about, you know, all the way until the middle of May before Jupiter's pushed beyond that 3-degree range. That's when you'll feel it most intensely. And we've said a lot about the significations of Jupiter and Uranus by whole sign horoscopes. We've looked at it, you know, I've been talking about it for over a year now since Jupiter entered Taurus. But what do we want to do today? I'd like to talk a little bit. As you guys know, I'm not a mundane or geopolitical astrologer. I focus more on the personal, the psychological, and the natal version of astrology. But I follow other astrologers who talk about collective astrology. For example, probably my favorite would be Richard Tarnas. Richard Tarnas is an archetypal astrologer who made mundane archetypal astrology quite famous through a book that he wrote, which probably a lot of you have read, called Cosmos and Psyche. It's one of my most well-loved, you can see, well-used books. It's just beat up because I use it all the time. And I would say that his, not only his style and his sensibility, but his way of grasping and talking about archetypes within the collective movements of history has always just captured my imagination, my heart, my soul. I just love his work. And I've become friends with his daughter, who's a real astrological prodigy child. She's Becca Tarnas. She's amazing too. I really like her work. And a lot of the people who've come out of sort of, I guess you could call it his lineage, over in the California Institute of Integral Studies, Pacifica. There's a lot of really great archetypal minds who have come out of that school, including another book that I love, and an author and astrologer, Ren Butler's book, The Archetypal Universe, which I really, really appreciate. It's one of my favorite cookbooks because it's not just a cookbook. I say that and I realize that some people might think that the word cookbook sounds like an insult. This is an archetypal cookbook, and it is different from any other astrological, like pop astrology out there in terms of cookbooks. This is one of my favorite books. And so what I'm going to do, I am going to read from a little bit of Ren Butler today with respect to Jupiter and Uranus and the significations on an archetypal level. Then I'm going to read to you some of what Richard Tarnas had to say about this. And in subsequent episodes, we are going to look at a few brief chapters from his book, Cosmos and Psyche, some passages from there. And I'm going to read them with respect to the way in which Jupiter and Uranus tend to play out in the collective or historically. And as I go, I'm going to dovetail with reflections about how those themes work into our personal lives. And I think this will be a good way of preparing us to notice Jupiter and Uranus in the collective story, wherever we notice it. If we're someone who watches the news or not, we're going to see it playing out with respect to the people in our lives and with respect to our vision of the collective, whatever, you know, whatever niche we find ourselves in within it. And so I think it's important to look at that because historical transits require at least some attention to the historical and collective themes. So as you guys know, I present these without any particular agenda or bias, at least not consciously. And so that's the goal for today. All right, so let's get into it. We're going to start with a few thoughts from Ren Butler, and I'll offer my own reflections as we go. So here's what he says about Jupiter-Uranus. Excuse me. He talks about dramatic breakthroughs and quantum leaps. These are the archetypal principles when the two combine. Now, this could be by any aspect. Dramatic breakthroughs and quantum leaps, sudden unexpected openings and awakenings, exciting feelings of freedom and space, illuminative or Promethean types of ecstasy, the potential for manic and impulsive excesses, hubris and overweening pride, attraction to get-rich-quick programs, new age ideals that promise liberation without effort or pain. So you can feel the promise of this kind of expansive revolutionary opening that Jupiter-Uranus represents. But you can also feel the potential for something that overpromises and underdelivers, or something that exacerbates some kind of speedy and impulsive and somewhat reckless, like pride or arrogance, and or maybe overestimating how great something is or could be, all of which go together with Jupiter and Uranus. And then when you're thinking about applying that in Taurus, you're thinking about things that are Venusian. That could be a sense of peace and ease and stability in a solid earth sign. That could be things that you think will open and create more of that, or beauty, or love, or sensuality, or pleasure, or anything involving Venusian themes like relationships. So those are things that we can then become aware of. And we've talked about those things a lot already. He continues talking about character and themes, dramatic breakthroughs and quantum leaps, exciting feelings of freedom and space, rebirth and awakening, the surprising resolution of problems. That's one of my favorite things about Jupiter and Uranus contacts. I'll never forget, our lease was up when we owned it, when Ashley and I owned a yoga studio together, and it was the Jupiter Uranus opposition, and I believe it was Aries and Libra. Anyway, I'm just going off my memory. Anyway, our lease came up at the yoga studio, and we suddenly found ourselves needing to, or no, I'm sorry, I got the story wrong. We were in a building in our yoga studio, and they started building a parking garage literally right next door, like 10 feet away from our window. They started like detonating TNT like outside the window. And because they were excavating, rats started coming into, because, you know, they're like excavating the ground and stuff. So rats were coming into the yoga studio. It was crazy. And we suddenly were faced with this kind of crisis. But then by some good fortune, the owner of the building sympathized with our situation, because he's like, well, you're trying to do yoga and they're like blowing up the ground and putting a parking garage in next to your building. So he allowed us to move into another commercial building that they had in a much bigger space for the same rent. So it's this unexpected and surprising breakthrough. We actually had the resolution of a problem happen very quickly, and it was actually a much bigger, better space, but for the same price. That's Jupiter Uranus, where you're just like, oh my God, I feel like I kind of, you know, I hit some good luck and the sudden revolution happens. But it sometimes does come alongside with the feeling of a sudden crisis that has to be solved or resolved quickly. Unexpected openings and opportunities, expansion of horizons, yearnings for growth and improvement, changes of fortune or philosophy. It's also that kind of revolutionary, like I've had a breakthrough in my understanding. That's very common. But these things can happen in the collective or personally. Hope springs eternal in the human breast, says Alexander Pope, or the sacred yes from Nietzsche. When the right path opens, there is no hesitation. You are enthused and experience an absolute abundance of yes. That was said by Carolyn Casey about Jupiter Uranus, and she was born with Jupiter sextile Uranus. Failure is impossible. Susan B. Anthony said that, Jupiter trine Uranus in her chart. Feelings of heightened aliveness, access to new layers or realms of experience, transcendence of petty problems and attachments, urges to share one's light, the light at the end of the tunnel, the pearl of great price, daybreak everywhere, the eureka moment. So you see how nice and uplifting it is. It's like a rainbow-colored lightning strike that does no harm, but breaks up stagnation. Feelings of universal redemption, collective epiphanies and awakenings, a sense of shared credit, breakthroughs and benefit that benefit everyone, an experience of the people and environment around one vibrantly coming alive, the ideals of higher emancipation, freedom from all, freedom through education, the truth shall make you free, the ideal of not selling out, urges to liberate as much as possible. Moments of genius or brilliance, divine inspiration, creative frenzy, the illuminative type of ecstasy, to become as God, flashes of greatness, climax moments with an evolution within an evolutionary cycle. And that's important because all of us personally are, I mean, especially if you take in astrology, I assume that a lot of people out there are interested in personal growth. Astrology has always been for people who are, that have some kind of spiritual outlook, for the most part, throughout history. And so within your spiritual development, growth, whatever we want to call it, there are moments where all of a sudden you feel an accelerated opening of awareness, of consciousness, of growth, of evolving. So Jupiter Uranus, wherever it is in our chart, even if it comes along with a little bit of unexpected crisis, usually there's a feeling of growing rapidly because of what occurs, of being able to solve problems, of having epiphanies and breakthroughs. So now we have to remember that it takes sometimes the seeding moment of a conjunction. Jupiter and Uranus are conjoining. The seeding moment is not always visible right away. And so you have to give it time. We look for astrological events to be, you know, flashing on the day of the event. And although we're talking about, oh, the conjunction on the 20th, which sort of sets us up for thinking something's going to happen on that day, the seeding of a cycle can take a while to express itself and play out. So you have to keep that in mind. Shadow qualities, he mentions, a tendency toward manic and impulsive excess, overdoing things and going too far, an inability to tolerate any level of structure or commitment, unrealistic urges for freedom outweighing all other considerations, an unwillingness to cooperate, flippant arrogance, unbridled eccentricity, unreliable and impractical nature, ongoing wanderlust and impatience, irresponsible or ineffectual rebellion, shallow or incomplete states of rebirth, false breakthroughs, flash in the pan delusions, attraction to get rich schemes, pie in the sky, over-optimism, fool's gold, religious or new age ideals that promise liberation without effort or pain. Just sign up here on the dotted line. One man's theology is another man's belly laugh. Potential for hubris and overweening pride, Midas touch inflation, Christ complex, cravings for glory, delusions of genius, philosophical conflicts, philosophical or intellectual elitism, and self-righteous genius. So you can feel the potential for the same energy that liberates, excites, frees, moves things, liberates stuck energy to be associated with inflation, hubris, pride, arrogance, destructiveness, restlessness, a kind of overly manic enthusiasm that's sort of empty. And this can come along in things that are philosophical or religious or spiritual. And if it doesn't require some work along with there's momentum in life and there are breakthroughs in life. But very few people I know experience those things without some sense that there was a certain amount of preparation that comes to bear on moments of great possibility and breakthrough. It's like, I can take advantage of this moment because I've been doing some amount of work and prep in my heart, in my soul, in my work, in my relationships. There's been groundwork laid, and then the moment reveals something. And I don't mean to sound like the benefits of this transit can really come for anyone, and it's not merit. I don't think that there's some kind of merit-based thing going on in the sky. I mean, there's karma, and I don't know how it works, you know? But the important thing that I'm trying to say is that a lot of the shadow qualities tend to come up for people who aren't doing any work, and then suddenly this energy comes through and it can delude people into thinking that something is possible without any prior work or endeavor, right? Whereas it seems to be most positively expressed in the lives of people who experience it as like a tidal wave of momentum that has some work going into it, you know, on the level of our consciousness, on the level of our relationships. Like, you know, Jupiter Uranus, in other words, is a little bit like you get to ride this wave, but you're reaping what you've sown still, you know? So I say that not because I want to say like, well, if you don't get something great, it means you didn't put the work in. I don't think it's like that, but it's also, there is a correlation between people who tend to get most deluded by these experiences and people who think that something can happen quick without effort. That's a very like textbook Jupiter Uranus thing. So it's just something to be aware of. I don't mean, again, I'm not trying to make some kind of pronouncement about who's good and bad or who deserves something, because I have no idea who deserves anything, you know, including myself. Anyhow, now I want to read you, we're going to read two passages. Perhaps this is coming now from Richard Tarnas's Cosmos and Psyche. We're going to get to know Jupiter Uranus collectively and historically now. Perhaps the most dazzling of these, he's talking about outer planetary cycles that he studied. Perhaps the most dazzling of these were the major alignments of the relatively short Jupiter Uranus cycle, with each conjunction lasting approximately 14 months. He has a very broad range of aspect orb that he uses for archetypal astrology. I prefer three, but I think I don't quibble with him when it comes to mundane astrology. For personal, I think natal charts, I think three is better. But anyway, as with the other planets known to the ancients, the archetypal significance of the planet Jupiter seems to have been established in the earliest origins of the classical astrological tradition. Linked with specific qualities of the corresponding mythic figure, the Greek deity Zeus, the king of the Olympian gods, the Babylonian Marduk, the Roman Jupiter, it received as well certain symbolic amplifications that emerged in the various contributing traditions, Platonic, Hermetic, Arabic, medieval, and Renaissance. Throughout this historical development, Jupiter has been associated with the principle of expansion and magnitude, providence and plenitude, liberality, elevation and ascendancy, and with the tendency to experience growth and progress, success, honor, good fortune, abundance, aggrandizement, prodigality, excess, and inflation. It also has a frequent association with the realm of and aspirations of culture, especially high culture, high principle, higher learning, breadth of knowledge, liberal education, cultural erudition, and a wide and encompassing vision. In general, it seems to impel a movement towards encompassing greater wholes and enlarging one's world, embracing principles of order, higher orders of magnitude, brighter, broader horizons of experience. Now, notice that he mentions Jupiter in relation to order. Most of the time, everyone thinks that the various ordering institutions of a civilization are Saturnian. They are not. They tend in ancient astrology to be Jupiterian. Now, we tend to think of them as Saturnian insofar as they are corrupt, stagnant, decayed, filled with old Senex figures who need to be displaced by something younger and more alive, right? And that's problematic. And that, in a sense, is Saturnian. It's not all there is to Saturn, though. We ought to say that. But when we think about the ideal way in which education, religion, culture, whether it's music and the arts or religion and spirituality ought to or could work at its best in a civilization, we are thinking of Jupiter in the ancient astrological sense of things. So Jupiter and Uranus can coincide with moments of tremendous cultural innovation, expansion, breakthrough, etc., although they are often also the seeding points for tremendous revolutionary impulses and activities that come about as a result of decay and the need for the reestablishment of virtue. And we'll see that in a second. When Jupiter and a second planet enter into cyclical alignment, the coinciding events suggest Jupiter's archetypal influence to be one of magnifying and supporting the second planetary archetype with an expansive, elevating quality, crowning it, as it were, granting it success, honoring it, bringing it to fruition, mediating its positive unfolding, its growth, its fulfillment, its enrichment, its cultural ascension, with a definite potential for excess and inflation. So Jupiter is doing that with respect to Uranus, Promethean impulse toward freedom, liberation, emancipation, inventiveness, originality, eccentricity. In the Jupiter-Uranus cycle, all these tendencies seem to interact in an especially vivid manner with the principle we have seen associated with the planet Uranus, the archetypal complex encompassing sudden radical change, creative breakthrough, rebellion against constraints and the status quo, the impulse for freedom and the new sudden openings and awakenings, a tendency to constellate the unexpected and disruptive, and so forth. The specific nature of these two planetary principles was such that their archetypal interaction seemed to have a mutually stimulating effect that was highly synergistic. An expansively and buoyantly energizing quality characterized such eras, one that often engendered a certain creative brilliance and the excitement of experiencing suddenly expanded horizons. In world transits, the cyclical alignments of Jupiter and Uranus correlated consistently with condensed waves of celebrated milestones of creative or emancipatory activities across many fields. Excuse me. The conjunction of the two planets occurs approximately every 14 years. During each of these, as well as during the intervening oppositions, decisive crests of remarkably synchronous breakthroughs and innovations appeared to take place within a brief period of time in many areas of human activity. The evidence suggested that the continuing long-term cultural developments that we saw associated with the longer Uranus-Pluto cycles and with other longer outer planet cycles we have yet to examine, such as Uranus-Neptune, consistently burst forth in a more frequent cyclical efflorescence in coincidence with the Jupiter-Uranus alignments. These cyclical waves of creative and emancipatory cultural activity occurred either as intervening crests between the longer, less frequent Uranus-Pluto alignments or as climactic moments during or just after the period of the longer alignment. As with the personal transits of Uranus cited earlier, I found it here too on the collective level when I closely investigated the exact dates of specific cultural phenomena of this character. I could track the frequency and quality of significant creative and liberating breakthroughs, achievements, and new beginnings in the culture as a whole against the shifting planetary positions in the months and years on each side of the exact alignment, with a result that closely resembled the shape of a bell curve as the two planets, Jupiter and Uranus, moved toward exactitude and then moved apart. Although events of this kind frequently took place when Jupiter and Uranus were in close alignment in all major aspects, I found as the research progressed that the most vivid synchronistic and sequential patterns were evident in the succession of axial alignments, conjunctions, and oppositions. And now we're at a conjunction. With the relevant events tending to occur in a wave-like continuum during a period when the two planets were within approximately 15 degrees of exact aspect. Not only synchronic patterns of simultaneous expressions of cultural creativity, rebellion, and awakenings, but also extraordinarily precise diachronic patterns of closely related events across a series of consecutive alignments were consistently evident in close correlation with this planetary cycle. So I highly recommend reading this book for yourself, right? But what I would like to do next is I'd like to read you just this short passage. And then in subsequent episodes, I'm going to read you a few other things that give you a feel for what he's actually talking about, historically speaking. The first one we're going to take a look at today is the convergence of scientific breakthroughs. Now, when we think about a scientific breakthrough in the collective, maybe you or me have very little interest in the development of research in various fields of science and technology. But the important thing is that the exact same archetype holds true on a personal level. So I'm going to read you something right now about convergences of scientific breakthroughs that tend to happen around Jupiter-Uranus configurations, especially conjunctions and oppositions. But I want to emphasize that this sense of discovery, of breakthrough in understanding, is also, so although it's happening in the collective, it is being mirrored personally. Where if it's in your first house, you might be having breakthroughs of understanding about yourself or your body or your health. If it's in your 10th house, you may be experiencing breakthroughs of understanding and epiphanies and revolutionary insights with respect to your career path or the skills that you have that you work with in your career. It could be about family karma and breakthroughs and insights and epiphanies with respect to the 4th house, right? So the same exact idea of these sort of lightning-like strikes and sudden flashes of awareness and breakthrough in our understanding that progress us or give us a kind of momentum to move forward, there's a direct parallel to our personal lives. So you may or may not have interest in the collective significations of scientific or technological breakthroughs, but there is a direct parallel to that kind of Promethean insight in our personal lives. That's what I tend to focus on. But let's read just a little bit about what tends to happen under these periods in the collective. So this is just about two pages. Earlier in my research, I was alerted to the possibility of a cyclical pattern in history that correlated with the Jupiter-Uranus cycle when I noticed that a number of famous coincidences in the history of science, when two or more scientists virtually simultaneously brought major discoveries into the public arena, also happened to coincide with a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. One of the first instances I came upon, often cited by historians of science, was when Kepler and Galileo independently made public within a few months of each other their separate discoveries that confirmed the Copernican theory of the solar system. In the summer of 1609, Kepler published in Prague his revolutionary work Astronomica Nova, which introduced his first two laws of planetary motion, stating that the planets moved in elliptical orbits with speeds based on equal areas swept out in equal times, thereby resolving the problem of the planets that astronomers had struggled with for two millennia. In that same summer, Galileo made the first public demonstration of the telescope in front of the Venetian Senate, then in Padua, between October 1609 and January 1610. He turned his telescope to the heavens for the first time and discovered the unbelievable numerous individual stars of the Milky Way, the craters on the moon, the spots on the sun, the four satellites of Jupiter, the phases of Venus, and other celestial phenomena that he found supported the Copernican hypothesis. On March 12, 1610, he published Sidereus Nuncius, the Starry Messenger, the epoch-making account of his observations, this entire period also coinciding with Galileo's personal transit of Uranus opposite natal Uranus. A combination of the two events, the publication of Kepler's mathematical findings and Galileo's telescopic discoveries, provided the scientific world with a dramatic concurrence of evidence that effectively supported the heliocentric theory, brought it to widespread public attention, and laid the foundations for the eventual success of the Copernican revolution. Jupiter and Uranus were in close conjunction at the time of both publications, having been within 15 degrees of each other in the 14-month period prior. Jupiter and Uranus were again in conjunction in the 14-month period from November 1899 through December 1900. It has often been pointed out that this moment of the turn of the 20th century marked the coincidental beginning of the two centuries' most important intellectual revolutions, psychoanalysis and quantum theory. Psychoanalysis was brought to public notice by the publication in Vienna of Freud's The Interpretation of Dreams. And it was in two meetings of the German Physical Society in Berlin in the autumn of 1900 that Max Planck introduced his groundbreaking hypothesis that radiant energy is emitted or absorbed in discrete quanta, thereby initiating the 20th century revolution of quantum physics. Appropriate to its own theory, quantum physics has progressed not in continuous fashion, but rather in two major quantum leaps, one at its birth in 1900 with Planck, the second at its coming to maturity in 1927. Jupiter and Uranus were again conjunct in the extraordinary 14-month period from March 1927 to April 1928, when Niels Bohr, Werner Heisenberg, and their colleagues brought the quantum physics revolution begun by Planck to a culmination, both individually and in interaction at the historic October 1927 Solvay Congress in Brussels. It had been said that in 1927, the pace of discovery in theoretical physics was perhaps greater than in any other year in the history of science. The resulting synthesis was, in the words of the intellectual leader of the Congress, Bohr, the results of, quote, a singularly fruitful cooperation of a whole generation of physicists, who included Schrodinger, Born, de Broglie, Pauli, I don't know how to pronounce all these names, I'm sorry, and Planck and Heisenberg. Planck. During the period of this conjunction from March 1927 through April 1928, both of the two major revolutionary axioms of quantum mechanics, Heisenberg's principle of indeterminacy and Bohr's principle of complementarity, were formulated and made public. Moreover, the same conjunction in 1927, coincided with one of the most significant milestones in modern cosmology as the Belgian astrophysicist, Georges Lemaitrier, proposed at this time the first expanding universe cosmology and articulated a mathematical superstructure for what became the Big Bang theory of the origin of the universe. During the same alignment, Alfred North Whitehead delivered the Gifford Lectures, which became the basis for process and reality and process philosophy, the last major metaphysical system of modern philosophy. Jupiter and Uranus were also in conjunction at the time of the famous series of events that led to the first public announcement of the theory of evolution by Darwin and Alfred Russel Wallace in July of 1858, a different form, though equally momentous and fruitful, of joint scientific breakthrough. Although Darwin had privately formulated the theory of evolution in his notebooks in September 1838, he did not make his findings public for nearly 20 years. Instead, he gradually accumulated evidence and developed the theory in relative isolation. Then on June 18, 1858, he unexpectedly received from Wallace, who was in the Malay archipelago, a letter containing a statement of the theory of evolution, which Wallace had conceived independently, in virtually identical form. As a result of this letter and the urging of Darwin's colleagues, a joint paper by Darwin and Wallace was read before the Linnean Society of London on July 1st, announcing the theory. 1858. Immediately afterward, during this conjunction, Darwin commenced writing his magnum opus, The Origin of Species, the foundational work of modern biology. Remember that just because some of these theories end up becoming displaced doesn't mean that they don't constitute a breakthrough in how we think and how we understand and in education or knowledge or the dogmas or doctrines of our collective, even if they, are faulty in various ways. They still mark these milestones in how we think or see or how our minds are thinking about the paradigms that we live with. It was these several convergences of scientific discoveries that entered the public awareness during Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions, Kepler and Galileo, Darwin and Wallace, Freud and Planck, Bohr, Heisenberg, Lemaitre, Whitehead, and the rest, that first suggested to me the existence of a larger pattern. At this early point in my research, I would probably not have noticed these correlations except for the combination of there being such well-known turning points in the history of science and the striking appropriateness of the events for the archetypal meanings ascribed to Jupiter and Uranus. the successful fruition and cultural elevation, Jupiter, in a sudden, unexpected manner, of the impulse for creative breakthrough and radical change, Uranus. In each case, it was as if the Promethean principle in the collective psyche had suddenly received an expansive amplification and fulfillment, and an unexpected cultural affirmation and ascendancy. So that is the end of that little piece. That I think that it's important, and we're going to look at a few more brief excerpts in subsequent episodes, because what I want to get across is the way in which we talk about breakthrough, and we talk about moments of enlightenment. And we on my channel, we tend to talk about those things on the level of our personal lives. But there is a correlation with these exact same themes in terms of cultural milestones in the sciences and the arts. And he also mentions things like film and culture and politics as well. So we're going to look at, you know, the connection between Jupiter and Uranus and moments of political revolution and cultural milestones in the arts, not just the sciences. So there's a few more things I want to look at in some subsequent episodes, like I said. Anyway, we'll leave it there for today. There is something like the scientific revolution, right? Like the milestones of quantum mechanics that happen in the collective, happening in our personal lives. How exciting is that? That our soul gets to have its own quantum physical breakthrough, or its own rapid development and breakthrough of understanding when it comes to different areas of our lives. That those things are not reserved only for history, that they are part of our individual narrative arcs, that we too have Copernican revolutions in our lives. What do they look like? How do they feel? Where are they happening in your life? The best way to figure that out is go back to any of the horoscopes that we've done on this channel for Jupiter, Uranus, and Taurus, and you can get a feel for what topics are being activated in your personal life through the birth chart. And that's where you're going to see that kind of Copernican paradigmatic shift happening. Really profound. Anyway, that is it for today. Stick around after I sign off if you want to learn more about the upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. It begins in June, on June 16th. Studying astrology is, at this moment, is really powerful. Pluto entering Aquarius, Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. One of the great ways to grab hold of the energies in the collective is to be intentional about the things that we are learning, studying, and immersing ourselves in during such important astrological seasons. We can grow and develop so much when we study astrology in depth, when we just go a little bit more deeper and get a little bit more intentional about it. I wouldn't be doing this for as long as I have been and be as passionate as I am about astrological education if I didn't see people every single day in our programs and all the various classes we have, like deeply transforming, healing, growing, and revolutionizing their lives. So anyway, I urge you to consider coming and studying with us. Stick around after I sign off to learn more about it. All right, that's it for today. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends, but if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice they have my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session, and then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. It's available all the way up to the start of the program. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.